Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So past the hour, and we begin the last show of this week. It is, after all, Friday, and what a Friday it is. It is an exquisitely beautiful mid-autumn Friday here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, almost level West Virginia. That gorgeous slanting light of the fading year. It's just pretty outside. And I kind of had to be dragged kicking and screaming in here. Because I got it. You know, one of these days, we got to figure out a way to make a sort of an open-air studio so we can, really get that front porch thing going. Because it is Friday on the front porch on the horn. You know what that means. Just a casual cussing and discussing, carrying on conversation, anything you want to bring. But it's always that way, isn't it? This every broadcast is a front porch broadcast. Yeah. But seriously, you can bring what you want to bring to the table, and we can cuss and discuss until night falls and all the sweet iced tea's gone. How's that sound? Good. So, let's see. Any news or announcements or anything? Let's see. No show next Wednesday. Go ahead and tell you that now. No show next Wednesday. We've got doctor's appointments. We've got to take Sarah and Margie to appointments about 2 hours away, trying to find a diagnostician who can tell us what's wrong with our daughters. Because, no details or anything need be, but it's just frustrating. It is very frustrating trying to get good care, and so that means we're going to be driving about 2 hours for doctors. And I doubt very seriously that I'm going to be back by 6 o'clock Eastern Time on Wednesday evening next. It's possible, but not highly likely. So there you have that. Let's do this right off the top, because Kate was reminding me last night, give you an idea of where we are with fundraising as the month wears out. What is fascinating or wonderful about this is that we've got a reasonable chance of actually making the monthly fundraising goal, thanks to generous contributions. Have made things, well, we can pay bills. It's awfully nice to be able to pay bills. So thank you. And we are within $500, like I said last night, we were within $500 of making the monthly goal. You know, if we made that, say, by Moran Monday, which would be the 25th of October, and I could go to the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st, and not have to say a word about fundraising, wouldn't that be cool? That would be cool. It would feel really, really good. So there we have it. The PayPal button, by the way, is at headonradionetwork.com. There's a tab there called Contribute. Just click on Contribute. Go in there. The snail mail address is there, too. And thank you to all of you who have contributed so kindly over the course of the month to get us as close as we are. Thank you indeed. Let's see. Now, as far as the beginning place this evening is concerned, I'm of two minds. You know, the big WikiLeaks document dump has just hit the presses. And the New York Times has three headlines up under a master headline called The War Logs. A trove of secret field reports from Iraq obtained by the group WikiLeaks sheds new light on such issues as civilian deaths, detainee abuse, and the involvement of Iran. One article in particular grabbed me. Sabrina Tavernese and Andrew Laren are the writers of an article called A Grim Portrait of Civilian Deaths in Iraq. And what I find surprising about this is stuff we already knew. That's the most surprising part of it, is that you knew what was going on in Iraq. You knew the butchery. You knew the barbarity that was taking place. Who is shocked by these by the information in these documents? Who? I'll tell you who. The people who rely on the for-profit media for anything relating to information in this world. Here's how the article begins. The reports in the archive disclosed by WikiLeaks offer an incomplete, yet startlingly graphic portrait of one of the most contentious issues in the Iraq War: how many Iraqi civilians have been killed and by whom. Now, there is, the reports make it clear that most civilians, this is of the official spin, most civilians by far were killed by other Iraqis. Two of the worst days of the war came on August 31st, 2005, when a stampede on a bridge in Baghdad killed more than 950 people. And then on August 14th, 2007, when truck bombs killed more than 500 people in a rural area near the border with Syria. That's the official spin. It was Iraqis killing Iraqis. But it's not that easy, is it? Because the Iraqis would not have been killing the Iraqis had we not gone in there and taken out everything in the way of a civil society so that the sectarian violence flared and ancient hatreds burned anew. There is not a single civilian death that happened in Iraq that does not get posted to our, the United States, yours and mine, we the people, that does not get posted to our butcher's bill. The documents also reveal many previously unreported instances in which American soldiers killed civilians at checkpoints from helicopters in operations. Such killings are a central reason Iraqis turned against the American presence in their country, a situation that is now being repeated in Afghanistan. Let's see. Let's take a few what the New York Times allows us to read of the nightmare butcher's bill. The archive contains reports on at least four cases of lethal shootings from helicopters. In the bloodiest, on July 16, 2007, as many as 26 Iraqis were killed, about half of them civilians. However, the tally was called in by two different people, and it is possible that the deaths were counted twice. Oh, really? And then this, in a sort of, well, in another case in February 2007, an Apache helicopter shot and killed two Iraqi men believed to have been firing mortars, even though they made surrendering motions because, according to a military lawyer cited in the report, they cannot surrender to aircraft and are still valid targets. My, oh my, can you imagine going to law school for 3 years and sweating it out and carrying somebody's briefcase so that you could create that kind of legalistic mumbo-jumbo. Well, you can't surrender to an aircraft, so they're still valid targets. Fire away! But the thing is, I remember when the first study came out, and that would have been about around Halloween of 2004, because I was getting ready to do the Halloween show, and the story broke, and it was just like, ugh. And I remember it well to this day because of all the complaints that came in. He's talking bad about America. He can't talk about America. America good. America do good thing. America bring freedom, democracy to Iraq. Free America. That's the kind of crap you have to put up with when you've got, well, right-wingers. But that was back when we realized that the body count was going to be a lot worse. And it was. But it's hard to read these stories on the pages of the New York Times and not have one name come back to you, come back to you, come back to you again and again and again and again. Every link that I clicked at through the New York Times coverage, click Judith Miller, click Judith Miller, click stenographer, click run up to the war, click cheerleader, click Judith Miller. The New York Times has as much blood on its hands as we the people do. Some of us did what we could to try to point out the madness of this war. For our pains, we were called un-American. I'll never forget the first time when I was behind the microphone and I was called Baghdad Bob or Bob Al-Qaeda. For simply pointing out the reality that we had created on the ground there. Yeah. So, you know, you can go and read the WikiLeaks stuff for yourself. There's a ton of it. But don't expect to be surprised. Over the course of our nightmare adventure in Iraq, if you were listening to Mike Malloy, if you were listening to this program, if you were listening to other liberal progressive broadcasters, you know what a nightmare we created in that poor, poor, pitiful place after we destroyed everything resembling a civil society that they had and left demons to yawn their maws wide open and vomit hell forth upon the sands. You know, the sad thing is the number of people who don't. Anybody want to give me odds on how much denying goes on? I understand the Pentagon is in full-on sweat condition alpha trying to deal with all this stuff. But it's ours, and we own it. And I guess there really is a Pottery Barn rule, isn't there? But that is by no means all. Not at all. Not in the least. Because there's something else fulminating around out there that's gotten a little bit of noise today. I had to get together with our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien earlier today. Any opportunity to sit down with Dr. Bill is always a joy. And I happened to catch the opening refrains of the Neil Bortz show.
Bortz.
Yeah, it sounds like something that happens to your stomach after a hard night of hard living.
Bortz.
In which he was lauding and commenting most favorably upon these remarks from this miserable, sick, twisted individual in Texas. I'm talking about Stephen Brodin. Stephen Brodin is the Republican nominee in the Texas 30th Congressional District. And he was interviewed on WFAA Dallas Fort Worth yesterday. And they asked him to comment on something that he had said a year ago. He attended some teabagging event last year and said that the federal government is tyrannical. And then said, quote, "We have a constitutional remedy, and the framers say if that don't work, revolution." So WFAA interviewed him and asked him what he meant by all that. It's worth noting his response.
Said in June 2009, there is a solution.
We have a constitutional remedy here. And the framer says if that don't work, revolution.
Brodin says revolution first means at the ballot box, but a violent overthrow is an option.
Our nation was founded on violence.
In 2010, you would urge that as an option, though?
The option is on the table. I don't think that we should ever remove anything from the table as it relates to our liberties and our freedoms.
With voters armed, Broden will know if his words help or hurt. Brad Watson, Channel 8 News.
Let that sink in. The option, meaning by the option he means violence and violent overthrow of the government, is on the table. The option is on the table. He does say that it's not the first option, but it's an option. You know what? If violence is an option, I don't care if it's the first one or the 332nd one. Sooner or later, you'll get around to it. Because violence is viral. Violence has a certain allure, especially among the ignorant, the uninformed, and the phony patriotic. Remember Mr. Clemens' words, patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. Meanwhile, this creep is still endorsed. He is still endorsed by the Republican Party in Texas. He's still a candidate. And Ken Emanuelson, who's a teabagger in Dallas, says he doesn't disagree with the philosophical point. Do I see our government today anywhere close to that point? He says, no, I don't. But that's not what a lot of the other teabaggers have been saying. Reload. Remember the Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla? Reload. How about Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman? Telling her mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers to lock and load and go to the barricades. I don't think anytime somebody says something like this, I don't think you take it lightly. I don't think you can afford to say, it's a teabagger. Because these people, these idiots, are heavily armed. They got lots more guns than we do. Hell's bells, it's almost impossible to convince some liberals that they ought to own a gun. Listen, if you live in a country where everybody has a llama, you have a llama too. If you live in a country where everybody has a knife, you need a knife. If you live in a country where everybody has a gun, you need a gun. I'm just that way. Because, see, they have their guns, and they like to go to the shooting range and pretend they're killing you. The militia movement? Remember them? You remember the story about Joe Miller in Alaska that had the thugs falsely imprison a credentialed reporter? Do you remember this story? Guess what? His security came from an outfit called Drop Zone. Glenn Greenwald having noted day before yesterday that they're active duty soldiers. These thugs that Joe Miller hired to falsely imprison a credentialed reporter trying to ask a question. This from Palin Gates. Drop Zone Security Services is not just a company run by people who are not very clever, but the company is also right at the heart of the Alaska Citizens Militia. See, these things do have a certain interlocking quality to them. Yes, that's Alaska. Yeah, that creep is down in Texas. But there's a whole damn lot of guns in the miles between those two points. Drop Zone Security, Joe Miller's thugs, are at the heart of the Alaska Citizens Militia. And that group is commanded by Norm Olson. Who's Norm Olson? Norm Olson rose to infamy as the founder of the Michigan Militia. Drop Zone Security Services is owned by William F. Fulton, who calls himself Drop Zone Bill. He's one of the thugs in the arrest, the false arrest, of Tony Hopfinger, the journalist, the credentialed journalist. He owns a military surplus shop in Anchorage. That's where members of the Alaska Citizens Militia get together for, you know, coffee and flak vests. He's a local commander of the militia. Oh, they're an interesting group. Because they sit around with their firearms in one hand, masturbating with the other about the day that they get to put a bullet through you. And there are people out there encouraging them that they have a legal right to do so. Because at the heart of it all, that's the question. Do you, as a citizen of this country, have a legal right to engage in armed revolution, to engage in armed violence against the government that is comprised of we, the people of the United States? And I don't want to break anybody's heart, but no, you don't. You don't. Because it's the nature of the system. It's a systems question, not a political question. Once someone has embarked upon armed revolution, they have gone outside the system. And frankly, the system has the right to resist them. Otherwise, there'd be a little revolution in the Constitution now, wouldn't there? But instead, because the framers of the Constitution had a little bit more hope for the nation that they were birthing than that we would constantly be at each other's necks, they set up an amendable government, a government that could be changed. Granted, they had no idea what this nation would become. But they put the method for change, the method for providing for hopefully majority rule that was not totally without regard to the rights of the minority. They did that. And one of those rules is not go get a gun and start shooting people. Because, see, the question was posed to this Broden creep, who, by the way, masquerades under the mask of a follower of the Prince of Peace. No, really. They didn't ask him, you know, what happens if the Republicans don't win in 2010? And that was when he came out with, well, you know, the armed revolution. I don't suppose anybody's going to lose any sleep over this at night. At least not outside Texas's 30th District, or Anchorage, or anywhere else there's a militia, or anywhere else there's a bunch of right-wingers wandering around with bumper stickers that say, God, guns, and guts made America great. Now, nobody will be losing any sleep. But by God, don't sleepwalk either. Know where you are and know the fever pitch that these poor, ignorant jackasses have been whipped into.
to a certain extent, they're kind of innocent. These teabaggers. They're not very sharp. They are already predisposed to hate people who don't look like them. They've been told that liberals are out to get America, and that God, guns, and guts made America great. And that makes them dangerous. Because fools are easily used. Fools are easily leveraged by those who are not fools. And you know what? Dick Armey and Freedom Works, they're not fools. Not at all. Sarah Palin, she's unlettered, but she is no fool. Michelle Bachmann, religiously insane, but no fool. They know what they're doing. And they want power so bad they can taste it like the sharp tang of blood in the mouth when you accidentally bite your tongue. After the first, ow, that hurt, then comes the, oh, what is that? Damn, that's blood. It's kind of tangy. It ain't so bad. And then game on. Game on. So a little food for thought as we get started. I got another one. I got another one in the stack that maybe I want to get to later. I got some audio of a vicious, sickening right-wing member of Congress named Representative Paul Brown. And, you know, every time I hear audio of Representative Paul Brown, he sounds like he's loaded. But, no, this one has some special relevance. They're digging up the death panels again. But what was surprising, what surprised me the most was that this armed revolution comment is being bruited about in right-wing circles with great favoritism. My God, that is it, you know. Because you know what they're trying to do? If it was anybody but Republicans doing this, there would be investigations and arrests. This is nothing short of voter intimidation. I mean, isn't this Broden? Isn't he saying, go vote for me or I'll blow you away? If Republicans don't win this time, we're going to start shooting? That's what he's saying. And what that means is that if you value your hide, you had better stay home, or else if you go, you'd best vote for the Republicans. That's what they mean. That doesn't affect me. Likely doesn't affect you. But you know what? It's the 22nd day of October 2010. In two more days, the horn will be 5 years old. And we have stood here together for 5 years, unafraid, unbowed, unbent, and unbeholden. And we don't spook easy. Not at all. But you know what? A whole bunch of this country does. And it's the same part of this country that's going to read the New York Times or whatever newspaper tomorrow morning and go, I'll be damned, look what was in those documents when we knew all along. And they can be scared. This is voter intimidation. And it would be a felony if it was committed by anybody except a Republican. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim.
How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm all right, I think.
Good. Well, as I've said before, war does not bring out the very best in people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It doesn't bring out the best in people in real wars, and the urge for them doesn't bring the best out in people either.
No, I'm afraid you're right. I can only imagine the type of white paper that has been prepared to justify the war in Iraq and, you know, the things of that nature. You know, they always prepare a white paper which, in which they can provide the, what would you call it, the casus belli or the casus belli of any particular conflict.
Oh, they, yeah, there's always an after-the-fact sort of, yeah, justification. No, but really, we had to do this. We had no other choice.
It'll make interesting reading when, I'll call it Volume 2 of the Pentagon Papers, emerges one day, you know?
Well, and maybe that's, I think that's what these WikiLeaks, this WikiLeaks stuff is trying to do. I mean, Daniel Ellsberg has said very plainly, that this is heroic work being done by WikiLeaks.
Well, that's what this reminded me of. You know, it really did. But unfortunately, history is not linear. It's cyclical. And there we are with another armed conflict on our hands and very little to show of it except what I just call horror.
I think that's as good a word as any, Jim.
And as far as these people that you refer to as sleepwalkers?
Among others, yes.
You know, that brought to mind a quotation from Adolf Hitler. You know what he said? He said, "I proceed in my efforts to achieve my destiny with the assurance of a sleepwalker."
That's chilling.
That's what he said. It's part of what he's speaking. I don't know. I do have something on a lighter note to share with you, if I may.
Oh, do please.
Since we are approaching the Halloween season, or are already in it, I received a phone call from, I think it was one of John Racy's people this afternoon.
Oh, my.
And, of course, I let him go. Normally, I just hang up, but I just said, this is too good. This is too good an opportunity to miss. And so they went on and went on, and they said, "How do you feel about this?" And I replied, "I am the most lurid and frightening apparition of all. I am what's left of your conscience."
Oh, nicely done.
Happy Halloween.
Click.
No, I waited for him to say something.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I wanted to get at least...
Yeah, you can't come right up to the footlights and do that and not wait for a clap or two.
Well, he said, "Do you really feel that way?" And that's why I said, "Dial phone."
Oh, God.
By the way, speaking of...
You know what? You made that woman's life.
Well, I hope so.
She's going to be telling that story at Thanksgiving for 30 years.
She probably said, "Oh, my God, I think I must have received, been put through to some telephone man by some demon spawn."
You know, the other thing is always funny is let me check here. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see where you are. Cool. Be there in a little bit.
Well, I don't know. I did see some strange Halloween decorations today, and I had no idea that pneumatics have any part to play in Halloween decorations.
Oh, they're all the rage now.
My Lord. I saw things today. I mean, these people have put enough whatever inside those things to lift the Hindenburg.
Yeah, they come with their own little pumps and stuff. I imagine you could probably hook one up to a, well, never mind, stirrups and, you know, just, wow.
Oh, I wouldn't waste it on that, but you know, what's sad, Bob, is this. Now, somebody's going to think it's a lot of fun to come around after dark and put a bullet hole in one of those things, because I've seen that done in Christmas decorations of the same nature. I mean, it's not my way of decorating for Halloween or whatever, or Christmas, to put, you know, inflatables in my front yard or whatever, but if they want to do it, it's just fun, and I only got a good charge out of it and laugh. But I'll guarantee you there'll be somebody who will come around there and try to, you know, destroy what these people have done just to celebrate what was normal.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, to me, that's just kind of sad, the mentality of someone who would do something like that.
Well, but we know where we are, don't we? And, sure, a little 22, you know, something small scale. You know, nothing, but, yeah, I know what you mean.
Right. Air rifle, whatever. Whatever will penetrate the plastic. And, you know, people who will do stuff like that, well, I don't think they're too far removed from trying to put one in somebody they don't like or whatever.
Well, and that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make with all of these.
That's what I'm trying to, that's where I'm going here.
Yeah. Because they enjoy, you know, again, the Alaska Militia was founded by the guy who founded the Michigan Militia. We do remember the Michigan Militia, right?
Yeah, I mean, what is the difference between these people and some of these Nazi right-wing organizations, or the Posse Comitatus and things of that nature, or the people who influence individuals like Timothy McVeigh?
Michigan Militia.
I mean, you know, good Lord. But in their own minds, they have this opinion that because this country was based upon revolution, that we can have a second revolution and produce another world order in their own image.
But you see, Jim, they have no my point, though, is that they have no conception of it.
Well, that's the frightening thing about it. These are not thinking, rational people.
Revolutions are only revolutions if the revolutionary side wins. Otherwise, they're generally referred to as civil wars, and they are the bloodiest form of conflict that can ever strike any people.
And what is so frightening about revolutions and things like that is how quickly they devour their own children.
Sure. I mean, look at Alaska, for instance. Okay, their militia is founded by the guy who founded the Michigan Militia, with which Timothy McVeigh was deeply involved. Okay, the Alaska Militia is up to its armpits in involvement with that Alaska Independence Party. Do you remember them? That's the party that Sarah Palin was a member of, and her husband was a member of, and whose core plank is secession.
Well, you know, I just can't see any difference between these right-wing extremists than I can between the Brown Church, the SS, and all the other organs of power that produced the Third Reich.
Yeah, for me, the similarity is more to the SA, but I get what you're saying.
Well, I mean, exactly, because the SA beget the SS. In a sense that...
And instead of Ernst Röhm, we have Sarah Palin.
Yeah. And, of course, you see what happened to Ernst Röhm. I mean, what I'm trying to say is, when you have one sinister element taking charge, that element itself is going to produce one even more sinister and even deadlier. I mean, the SA came before the SS. And they simply changed uniforms, and of course the SS was initially Hitler's personal bodyguard and things of that nature. And that's the type of stuff that these political and social perambulations produce. It brings out the baser elements in people who are illiterate, people who are purposely unmindful of what they do because they don't want to even be challenged on any type of veracity that would support their position. And what do? Well, they say there's a ballot box, a jury box, and if I don't get my way through those two, is going to be the cartridge box.
There you go. And they take great pride in marching up and down. And, you know, again, this is one of those things that happens to you when you have a functioning knowledge of history. There was a great deal of marching up and down and shiny uniforms and playing of the Bonnie Blue flag. And in a year's time, the men who had been marching up and down like that had rags on their feet.
Yeah, you're right.
And it was 150 years ago. That gives me, because the same sort of, it's, I wouldn't be so serious about it were it not for the fact that this idiocy comes from the same same place. I mean, you've got people in South Carolina talking about nullification again. And Andrew Jackson had to threaten murder in order to make them stop talking it the last time.
Well, you know what Jackson told his own vice president, don't you?
What?
Well, his vice president was John C. Calhoun. And he said, you try this nullification business, or you succeed, and I'll come down there, and I'll hang you higher than Haman.
Yeah, and I'll, what'd he say? And then I'll get back on my horse, and I'll find the next secessionist, and I'll hang him.
Exactly.
And I'll keep hanging secessionists till there ain't no secessionists left. You know, I find, Jim, a little bit of a sidebar here, but I find it interesting that if you, and we mentioned this in our conversation, I think, last night, you've got some passing knowledge of New Orleans.
Yes, sir.
If you stand in Jackson Square and you look at that statue of Andrew Jackson on his charger rampant, and you look at the inscription on the plinth, it says, "The Union must above all be
preserved. Exactly.
Andrew Jackson. Well, you know, he didn't say that at the Battle of New Orleans. He said that about nullification and the teabaggers of 1859, well, 1830, who wanted to rend the young nation all to pieces.
Well, that's exactly what these people want to do. They want to nullify the Constitution, and they wish to destroy the fabric of any society in this country that doesn't march in lockstep with their own think space. And they are becoming, in my opinion, more and more resolute in their determination to do so. I mean, when I see flags with that two in the middle of the 13 stars, I mean, it tells me that not only are these people serious, but they're deadly serious in it.
That's the point. They're willing to kill. And I don't mean, you know, how many times do they have to tell us?
Well, you know, like, you only have
they show up at, it was a year ago that they were showing up at town hall meetings armed to the teeth. Rand Paul down in Kentucky inviting them to a rally on the State House grounds in Frankfort. And they showed up in their tri-cornered hats and their little Daniel Boone coonskin caps, and they all brought guns, real guns that shot real bullets that kill real people. You know, I suppose some conservative might say that we're overplaying this. But honest to God, Jim, I don't think so.
Well, when people come up and they have a meeting in which they're bearing weapons and tri-cornered hats and things like that, it tells me that these people think that they are going to fire another shot that's going to be heard around the world. And they're going to show very little mercy to anyone who gets in their way if, in fact, they exceed to any type of level of power and authority. That's what scares me. You don't have to tell me but one time when I see something like that. And, you know, it gives me cause for great concern. And, you know, you have to be very careful in what you say and to whom you say it. I mean,
look, I mean, I can't go to, I don't like going there in the first place. I can't go into Walmart without seeing some guy packing a pistol on his hip. It is not unusual to see that. And frankly, that gives me the, that just gives me the creeps. Because I don't know that guy's sane. I don't know what kind of training he's had with it. You know, this is West Virginia. We're not talking about a concealed carry. Constitutionally, in this state, you get to, you can march right down the middle of Main Street with a shotgun out.
Well, I mean, where are we? Dodge City?
Exactly. Yeah, you gotta pack, you gotta pack heat to go get a dozen eggs and a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk? I mean, somebody's compensating for something.
I bet you're compensating for perhaps, well, lack of ability in some other portion of human endeavor, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, here, here. You know, and they drive a Hummer, too.
You know, it's all, you know, and I just wonder how much of this type of balderol, well, it's not balderol, these types of activities, how much of these things are driven by some type of bizarre compensatory behavior?
There's that, but there's also the fact, you know, always, you know, always look for, you know, cui bono. Look to see who gets the good, for whom good. You know what? There's an argument that some transnational corporations might benefit by an America in chaos.
Well, that has definitely occurred to me, and there are a number of people waiting on the sidelines who would see like nothing better than to see this country collapse from within. And the only shots that will be fired will be at one another, to wit, as you said earlier, a civil war. And, you know, that's where I see this stuff leading.
Well, consider this, Jim. David in Tennessee tells me that Bill Haslam, and he's the sane Repiglican, and it's going to be elected governor in Tennessee pretty soon. David tells me he just had a sit down with statewide gun rights freaks, and they asked him a question, Jim. Will you sign a bill abolishing all weapons licenses if it passes the legislature and comes to your desk? His answer, yes, I will. Now, that's not to say that nobody can concealed carry. That's to say that, you know, that Tennessee will become an armed camp. But honest to God, what's the difference, Jim, in a state like that and Kandahar province? Everybody's got a gun there, too. Everybody's got a gun in Baghdad.
I'm afraid you're right.
And I don't see the presence of all those guns leading to a more civil society in either of those two places.
No, because whenever you have that type of mentality and firearms to support it, I can guarantee you at some point they will begin to lock and load and use those weapons and fire them. I mean, these are not toys in the attic.
No.
I mean, this is a reality situation in which we are literally performing this type of War of the Roses upon our own country, a bloodletting operation.
Well, you know, I've got active duty military that listens to this program, and I've got a lot of veterans like yourself and many others who know which end is the business end of a firearm. But, you know, we got a lot of liberals out there that would be more likely to hurt themselves if they tried to use a firearm. And that doesn't... I don't know what to make of it. It's disturbing to me.
I believe that basically there are elements at work in the world that, as far as America is concerned, they would love to see this country die of exsanguination.
Yeah, so the question becomes one of, do we just let them mow us down and set up their little balkanized paradise? How do you respond to a guy like this Broden in Texas? How do you respond to these militia creeps in Alaska? You know, Ron in Raleigh just wrote in and he said, with regard to the right to bear arms, and he says, ignorant, armed, and frightened white people. I'm certainly not going to ask one of these folks for the time of day.
Well, the trouble is people like that don't understand that rights are not absolute. They are relative.
Yeah, David in Tennessee noting, and I'd forgotten about this, firearms are already legal in bars in Tennessee if you've got a concealed carry license.
Well, that's a great place to have a weapon.
Right. And what could possibly, he says, what could possibly go wrong if there were more guns in bars?
Well, that man's a born-again fool and a born-again criminal. Because, I mean, anyone who would make a statement like that to mix alcohol.
No, but that's the way, no, you got to understand, they've had big fights in Tennessee. Big arguments. Because it started out that you could carry the gun into the bar, but you couldn't drink. But they went from there to, you can carry the gun into the bar, but we'd sure like to be able, we'd sure like for, you know, Wyatt Earp to be able to buy himself a belly up to the bar and buy himself a snootful.
Well, if you're going to go into a bar, you're not going to go in there to break it up with a hatchet like Carry Nation.
No, and I'm not talking about, you know, the nice self-respecting fern bars. I'm a redneck, Jim. I know the difference between a bar and a beer joint.
A bucket of blood, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in a couple of those myself, Bob.
And you know what? It ain't much for you look. And I saw a study not too long back that said drunk people, once you get loaded, you default to being insulted. They did some sort of psychological study, but the more intoxicated one becomes, the more likely one is to take some innocuous something or another as a dire insult.
You know, I have
now add guns to that.
You know, I have never understood nasty drunks. I mean, from a personal experience, I enjoy a cocktail or two or three. But in those situations, I just kind of mellow out, and I don't have any perception or thought of violence or of any type, not unless somebody tries to cold cock me. Now, if they do that, then I'm going to have to defend myself. But I just don't understand how anybody could say something like going into a beer joint or a bucket of blood or whatever, carrying a concealed weapon, in which all you have to do is remove the safety, and you're in business.
Game on.
Yeah, that's it. I just don't understand this type of mentality. And these people are promoting it with a vengeance. And as you said earlier in your broadcast, they are not to be ignored, and they are not to be laughed at, because so many people back in the late 20s, when Hitler was beginning his struggle of power, oh, they said he'll go the way of the dodo and this, that, and the other. Well, you see what happened there.
And, you know, and even more prosaically, all we need is one good viewing of Shane.
The Alan Ladd movie?
Yeah, with the Jack Palance. Pick up the gun. Pick up the gun.
Well, yeah, even in the media, there seems to be this type of admiration for people who do this. You know, maybe it started out with, go ahead and make my day, punk, or whatever. Well, that I could understand, because Clint Eastwood was doing the work of the Lord in that situation. But there are a lot of other people who would perceive it, well, if he can do it, so can I. And there just seems to be an increasing preponderance in movies, in the media, to glorify the solution of anything with a weapon or any other type of horrible solution.
You know, and I think at the end of the day, this all boils down to, Jim, peace is hard work.
Sure is.
And
sure.
It's drudge work, and it's boring work. And it's not nearly as exciting as things that go bang.
Well, this is true. And, you know, we have organizations and agencies like the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. I mean, why do you think these things were established?
Oh, don't think for a minute that there's not some Republican out there that would like to defund it or dissolve the ATF.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they've got a laundry list. They want to get rid of the Department of Commerce, the Department of Education, the Environmental Protection Agency, the ATF.
Sure do. And they just simply wish to destroy any type of organization that would enforce civilized society.
Well, you know, it's fascinating, Jim, to think sort of academically about this. If the teabaggers got their way, did they not realize that they wouldn't have, you know, because remember how they said, I want my country back. Well, they wouldn't have their country back. If the teabaggers got their way, this place, this whole continent would balkanize so quickly that they wouldn't be able to say Sarajevo.
Yeah, I mean, can't they take their lessons from what happened to Yugoslavia when it fell apart in those successor states, and how every little faction within that country that Tito had put together turned on itself and turned that entire country into a bloodbath?
You know, what, 40% of all monies that flow into the state of Alaska are federal tax dollars.
Oh, yeah. But they
want their country back.
I mean, I thought revenue sharing was dead, but in Alaska it certainly isn't. I mean, my God, I mean, if they want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg, well, I can't imagine anybody who's sane could want to do that.
You know, and there's the simple matter of highways. You know, a highway tax dollar, New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Minnesota, California, those states don't get back nearly as much as they put in.
Oh, no, they don't.
On the other hand, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, the Confederacy, you know, for every dollar they put in, they get, what, $2, $3, $4, $5 back? What happens to them when the teabaggers get their dream?
Well, under Nixon, that was called revenue sharing. In South Carolina, for example, for every dollar they put in, they got $9 back. And somewhere, revenue sharing sort of went the way of the dodo. And I'm not sure if they're getting back as much money as they put, you know, I'm not sure how that, what formula applies now, but, I mean.
Well, they're still getting more back than they put in.
Yeah, they sure do.
And they have no, and that's, you know, that's one of those things that proves the idiocy of the teabaggers.
Well,
they have no idea how government works. They just think that if they make a lot of noise and flash a lot of guns around, that we'll all be scared and we'll give them their political way. But they don't even realize, at least not these shock troopers that are out there, you know, the cannon fodder in this little cultural battle. They don't understand that they're the ones that are going to get burnt first. Because, you know, liberals, by definition, we try to work with each other. And given a chance, we will take care of each other. But these are lone wolf individualists. Proud, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
And they'll be the first ones out there crying, Lord, Lord.
Yep, they're all sitting there walking Gary Cooper or something.
You know, just... Yeah, lick that front sight just to take the haze off of it. Yeah, that's exactly it. Jim, it's been a wonderful conversation. You have a great weekend, my friend.
And the same to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Nice lineup of blinking phone lights here. I hope they're all people. And if you are, in fact, we will come to you in short order. There's one line open, 877-443-2366. Or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. You're listening to Friday on the Front Porch on America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
The morning is coming. It's quarter past nine. I should be working down. Fines, yeah, but I'm lying here with a good friend of mine, watching the sun in her hair. I pick the grapes from the hills to the sea.
today. Lying here, such a good place to be. I can't go anywhere. And I switch up in an arch of embrace, like some old and familiar place. Reflecting all of my dreams on a face like a fall on the last day of June 1935. Just out of Cambridge in a narrow country lane, a bottle green Bentley in the driving rain. Slips and skips around a corner, goes straight again. Heads up the drive to the door. The lights of the party shine over the fields, while lovers and dancers watch the cartoon wheel and argue realities to good ideas. In a world that's finished with war, and a lost wind of summer blows into the streets, past the tramps in the alleyway, rich and so cheap. You're a blind sleeping, you feel heartbeats through the floor on the last day of June 19. On the night that Ernst Röhm died, voices rang out in the rolling Bavarian hills, swept through the city and danced in the gutters, grown strong like the joining of wills. Oh, 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 I cut away like a roar in the distance, in moonlight carved out of steel. By the banks of the Rhine, dipping my feet in the cold stream of time. And I know I'm a dreamer, I know I'm out of line with the people I see everywhere. The couples walk by me, they're looking so good, their arms around each other, they head for the woods. They don't care who I'm strong with, no reason they should. Just a shadow that hangs in the air. But I thought I saw him cross over the hill with a whole ghostly army of men at his heel. I'm struck in the moment, it seemed to be real, like the fall on the last day of June 1935.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, you see, I see very little difference between the teabaggers and their paramilitary friends, the militia movement. I see very little... little difference at all between them and the German Sturmabteilung, the SA, otherwise known as the Brown Shirts. Very little difference at all. And believe me, I take no pleasure in saying that. I do take pleasure, however, in saying let's not waste any time whatsoever and go straightway to the phones, see what's cooking. If anything. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, yeah, just listen to this right quick. It's short. Okay. Where any homeowner has been defrauded or denied the basic protections or right, they say they're going to make the banks make them whole. This is Donovan, the Secretary of Housing. He said at this Washington press briefing, first and foremost, we are committed to accountability so that everyone in the mortgage process, banks, mortgage services, blah, 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 is following the law. And if they're not following the law, it's our responsibility that they be held accountable. But, he added, however, that the administration is focused on ensuring future compliance rather than looking back. Looking back, we're looking forward. Yikes, that shit is everywhere.
It is all, oh.
I'm sorry, I just was like, oh dear God, not looking back, looking forward, you know what I mean?
See, that just makes me want to run rabbits.
I knew you would love it because I was like trying to pull out, you know, a dread or two, and I'm thinking, what the, you know? But anyway, I don't know, I just, you know, because see, they're trying to pull, you know what, I think they're trying to pull another fast one where they don't dare do anything bank-friendly before this election because everyone got the hump. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting, you know, you and I and a few others of us were talking about the tax farming business on Tuesday night, and, you know, the first thing we did was we immediately went to the ancient Rome thing.
Well, that's the thing. That's why when you got that business I sent to you, right?
Yeah, and look, lo and behold, you know, you can read about it 2 days later on Huffington Post, or you can hear about it 2 days ahead of time on the Horn.
No, that shit was hilarious. When I saw that, I thought, oh no, and you know, and then I just quickly sort of looked up a couple of notes, you know, from my Roman history days, and yeah, that was a huge topic, you know, in that class I took. And it's so sick because it's exactly what they did, and they're doing it here. And the fact that that's not like front page on every station, you see what I mean? It's an amazing turn of event where the state is willing to relinquish that major power. I mean, that is one of the main aspects of a state is the ability to tax. And when they're turning it over to a corporation,
like J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yeah, no, I'm in a state of shock looking at the sort of macro ramification of state turning over that power, of that coercive power, to, you know what I mean, where are we at? This is straight-up feudalism. It really is not even neo. You see what I'm saying?
Right, and the conversations that we've had heretofore about it, Sandra, focused primarily on Florida. And, you know, Florida is a Republican wonderland, and it's no surprise that, you know, they'll have people wearing sackcloth soon.
No.
And, you know,
ground
or, you know,
zero,
right.
Ground zero for the fact that, you know, you can just envision this kind of corporate overlord where you really are a slave once again.
Well, yeah, and the first paragraph of this story from Huffington Post by William Alden refers to a woman who lived in Maryland who found out that J.P. Morgan Chase was her property tax collector.
No, it's...
Maryland.
Listen, I know, it's the whole premise is really incredible because, you know, you may owe a few hundred. Next thing you know, these motherfuckers are taking your house after charging you 18%, adding fees on top of fees on top of fees. And it's like there is no accountability with your local municipality. There's a voting transaction that happens. You see what I'm saying?
That's that accountability word. Yes.
This is so serious because it's like, hello? Now.
But consider the straits. I mean, or consider the circumstances, Sandra.
Yes.
You know, here you are. You're a municipality or you're a county, and your job is to assess the taxes on homes and get your property taxes and so forth. And because your government has been starved to death by virtue of the Bush tax cuts,
I understand.
You don't have the power to collect. You don't have the necessary means to collect them anymore. So here comes J.P. Morgan Chase, and they've just chartered a brand new little LLC in Florida called the Crippled Fawn Holdings LLC. And they say, listen, how much taxes are due here? What's your total tax bill?
Right.
And the county goes, $52 million. And J.P. Morgan Chase gets out their little checkbook, and then $52 million. Okay, paid in full. Now we're going to go collect, okay?
And when you think about, you know, they tried to say in that article, well, you know, in the Roman times, you know, they could use whatever coercion they wanted to, you know, whereas here, you know, you'll lose your property. But I beg to differ. This shit can drift into violence real quickly.
Yes, it can.
You know, because there are actual people who are operating out of these behemoths. And also, then we get back to the nation, the non-state actor conversation we was having. I'm like, this shit is on steroids. And unlike Rome, they doing it right here.
That's important. You know, the Romans didn't do it to themselves. They did it out in the provinces.
Right. You know, I mean, and they, you know, they did other things to themselves eventually. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is some inverted, horrifying shit going on.
Well, and to go back to what Jim and I, and then just me, what the topicality of the program, what happens when one of these J.P. Morgan Chase tax farmers goes around one of these teabaggers that's got, you know, seven firearms for every member of his family.
Yeah, that's shot up. Yeah.
And then, and remember, these are banks. You know, litigation is nothing to a bank, Sandra. Let's say J.P. Morgan or Bank of America or one of these other thug groups is dealing with a municipality in Kansas, and they go back to they say, you know what? We think we need bigger margins. We're not covering, we're not making enough profit out of this.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's so twisted. No, you're right. I mean, it's endless with this sort of unleash of the never-ending interest that they can charge because the courts threw out that provision, I think in 76. I forget the name of the case. But, I mean, everything is lined up for your average person to be just a fuck all over the place. And I'm so sick of the Obama administration siding with these corporations while trying to pretend that they care about the basic folks. I'm done with that story. That's a lie.
You know, Jim just wrote in, and I forget who said I wish Jim would have told me who said it because I've seen it before. The power to tax, this is from one of the early Supreme Court cases. The power to tax is the power to destroy.
Well, yeah, that's I don't know who said that, but I know that saying, sure. But also, Face said taxation is what, you know, creates a civil society, but that's when accountable people are doing it, not these non-state actors. I mean, the implications are incredible, and it's just what you said. The states have been starved to death because everyone's unemployed. There's not a tax base, per se, or it's been legislated to death where the tax collection is not much, like Prop 13, but the states need to get this money. So you have these corporations who are sitting on how much? Trillions. They got to do something with the money, so why not fleece people further? I mean, they're going to turn everyone into, I don't know, just, it's incredible. This tax farming shit has really done me over. I'm like, good night.
It was, I can't get it out of my head either, Sandra.
I'm just thinking about, you know, just sort of the implications that, you know, that the states are more than happy to turn that sort of power over an entity that's just concerned about the bottom line.
Well, you know? I mean, look, if you get in tax trouble, there is a very clearly delineated process through which you can go as a taxpayer to get yourself back out of hot water.
Yeah, it's not fun, but exactly. No.
But the thing is, if you're in a situation where $500 cripples you, and you're down $500 on your taxes, and then J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, whomever, come in and say, no, you don't owe $500 anymore. You owe $1,320. Where's the recourse?
No,
who can you sue? Because and that's what's troubling out of this. Well, it's all troubling. But the tax codes are statutory. These aren't regs. These are statutes. And if you're obliged to pay X dollars and J.P. Morgan Chase says that's no good anymore, you owe 2X plus 12, who do you go to? You can't, you know, by the time you get the thing through some sort of circuit court litigation in your county, they've sold your house on the courthouse steps.
And remember, the courts are not responsive to regular people anymore, which explains why they've been able to foreclose like maniacs in the first place. Keep that in mind. It's like, well, people aren't suing them, so they must be doing all right. Well, I was under the impression that people, you know, you can't just lawyer up if you just sort of broke. Not in this country.
No, because the Republicans made sure a long time ago that legal aid didn't have that kind of money laying around anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they destroyed it completely. But, you know, something you had just said, I forgot what I was going to connect it to.
Well, I know what when I mentioned the court system, the bit between the fraud being practiced on the courts with the foreclosures and the tax farming thing, you know, we see what we're being reminded, I think, out of all this, Sandra, we're being reminded how incredibly fragile a peaceful society is. It can go to hell in a minute.
No, in a minute. And also the whole thing with the sort of random application of law, you know?
Right, but a court, even if the court is responsive and you've got a good circuit judge, the court is still beholden to the parties to at least not cheat. How many foreclosures, you know, we know how many foreclosures right now look dodgy, you know, all of them. But before anybody had any idea that this the robo signing and the Walmart hairstylists were in there signing affidavits and couldn't spell the word, how many foreclosures went through that were nothing but unmitigated frauds upon the court? And what is the court's recourse in that instance?
I mean, it's incredible because now you have various other entities, even the government now demanding Bank of America come a bit more clean with what they're doing. But you know what they just said?
Yeah, they're back at it on Monday.
F you, we're on our way on Monday. So I'm thinking, you know, this is just sort of a bad Hobbs play. This whole thing is so Hobbesian because them MFers are acting straight up like I mean, like, I don't know, something, you know, sort of kings, you know? Kings and kingdoms.
Warlords, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe.
Can we
that,
say, yeah, yeah, warlords.
It's just, you know, it's unbelievable, and the sort of timidity that's coming out of the Obama administration, you know, it's really starting.
Well, you know what, if you haven't made your monthly in Kandahar province, some guy will bring a bunch of guys with AK-47s to shoot up the place and make sure you get it next month. What the hell's the difference?
But now just think about the whole full circle of this madness. These bitches did fraud from the beginning. Now they're doing fraud on the end of it. I mean, I just am, and then nobody's going to jail. And it's just like there's no accountability. And I can quickly turn to the Iraq story. Are we surprised by that bullshit?
No, sorry, what? Not me. I was sickened. Sickened, but not surprised.
Oh, no, it's disgusting, but I'm like, yeah, and I mean, where are we living at? And what kind of people actually are sitting around thinking that we're a force of good right now? I'm sorry. I'm thinking, you know, wake the hell up. But in the meanwhile, you know, we need to come to terms with this corporate power. This shit is way out of control.
And, you know why Bank of America's ramping it back up on Monday, right? Because if they flood the system with more dummy documents,
that
makes it, again, I come back to, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I didn't, but, you know, a court, a circuit court is a judge and a bailiff and a circuit clerk, maybe one law clerk, a secretary. And frankly, if you want to practice massive fraud on a circuit court, you're gonna.
Yeah, but can't they slow it to a snail's pace, though, just by virtue of the personnel?
You
I mean, I'm just saying, I understand, you know, they can try to ramp it through, but so we're supposed to go along with this idea that all their paperwork is fine. If they say they want this house, like Obama implied, we gotta just sort of let the banks, you know, do what they do.
I don't go with that, but one of the things that I was thinking about that bothers me the most, and again, you know, everybody likes to talk about the practice of law as if it's some dirty thing. It's really not. It is really predicated on a very bottom, very low level, you know, at the very foundation, it's predicated on honesty. You know, every time a lawyer signs a pleading, the lawyer is certifying that the pleading is going forward in good faith. And if it's found not to be, the judge can has almost limitless power to deal with that. But at the end of it, you know, at the very foundation of the whole system is this notion that, you know, we might disagree with each other, but we are dealing with each other honestly at arm's length. And that does not obtain in this. And to sit, well, and but because these rules are set up with a presumption of dignity and a certain amount of honesty, Sandra, especially where this is concerned, now I may be way off base, I may be totally wrong, and somebody who practices law can straighten me up, because I don't, and I know. You know, I had 3 years in law school. But there are rules about documents. And there are, and I mean, there are, this is too complicated, but there are rules about business documents. And there are rules about documents that are kept in the normal course and scope of business. And once you've turned in an affidavit saying that this is a document kept in the normal course and scope of business, it comes in. It's admitted as evidence. But that's all predicated on the parties being honest. And because these banks are operating wholly dishonestly, the whole damn system is in jeopardy. I don't know if anybody realizes that.
Okay, so if what you're saying is true, but how in the world is the Obama administration or the Justice Department not putting a halt to this if what you're saying sounds like you're structurally undermining the legal system?
It undermines the whole damn thing.
And so, yeah, I mean, I can pretty much follow you, and yeah, that's
I mean, I have, just by way of example, I know about this because I lived here and it was in the news all the time. We had a guy in the state police down at the state police crime lab, and his name was Fred Zane. Okay? Fred Zane, it turned out, was crazy about convictions. So Fred Zane would come into your courtroom, if you were the prosecutor, and he would testify that I don't care who it was at the defense table, that bastard killed Cock Robin. And he'd say, and we've got the forensic reports to show it. Boom, 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 boom. Admitted into evidence, admitted into evidence, admitted into evidence, admitted into evidence. On documentary rules. Okay? I mean, thousands of people went up the river with this cat. And then somewhere along the way, it turns out they found out he had been perjuring himself. And I'm talking about, this was going down back in the 90s, Sandra. And I'm not sure if all the Fred Zane cases are done in this state now. 15 years later.
And that's just one incident.
And that's one guy dummying up a bunch of cases. And these were criminal cases where the standard of proof was beyond a reasonable doubt, Sandra.
Right, right.
With the Bank of America, the court fraud, we're talking about civil proceedings where it's where the standard of proof is only more likely than not.
Right. It's not as exactly. No, I listen. I do understand what you're suggesting, and that's even more ridiculous.
It's some sort of twisted sequelae to what followed out of the whole bubble and the derivatives and the credit default swaps. That was, it's like you said, it was fraud on the front end, and it's going to be fraud on the back end. And they collapsed, they damn near collapsed an entire national economy with what happened on the front end, and they run the risk of collapsing an entire legal system with what's going on the back end.
Especially with the nothing to see here attitude from the government. It's just appalling. It's appalling that nothing to see here is just rampant through our system. And, I don't know. I don't know what to say. But I must ask you if you noticed that all of a sudden this Juan Williams was sexual harassing women. I think that's interesting.
No, what?
Yeah, that's the thing. These bitches, shit keep coming out. Because NPR is being crucified here. So they released that he was disciplined years ago for sexual harassing some of the...
For Clarence Thomasing?
Yes. And I can't say I'm not shocked. You know, it all goes hand in hand. When they talk, when these people are like they are, harassing women, it's just sort of afterthought. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it's... Doesn't that come from a sense of privilege?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the fact that he's going to, like, do that to women is, like, to me, I'm like, yeah, and? You see what I mean? But it's funny that it's coming out, his shit looks stank all day long. You know what I'm saying?
But the nice thing is, he's gone to a place, it's like discussing the afterlife going to Radio Rwanda, isn't it? He's gone to a place where that doesn't matter.
Well, exactly. I mean, the fact that they gave him $2 million... because of his bigotry just speaks volumes. I'm like,
well, there's another story out there by Amanda Turkle. Fox News sued by ex-employee alleging he was fired for complaining about workplace racism.
Well, once again, yeah. I mean, I understand.
I know, duh.
I understand we're supposed to operate in this society as if certain things are taboo and, oh, no, that can't go on. But, no. As vitriolic as the scene is in this country, no. And we got dumbasses calling these babies Asians who are like, I'm still stuck on that. I can't even look at that one.
You look more like Asians to me.
Yeah. No, it's like, you stupid, dumb, white, idiot. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Like, you got them all right so far.
No, I'm like, are you kidding me? It's just...
Well, they all look the same to me.
Oh, no, it's just definitely a play on that, and it's even more disgusting. It's like you're going to cough up this sort of, I'll use Asians because they're acceptable in some light. I mean, she covered the whole gamut there. And she's a dumbass white bitch. I'm sorry. Sometimes these white women, I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, the Jenny Thomas, Meg Whitman, Jan Brewer, Sharon Angle, Carly Fiorina.
They're all just... Oh, speaking of that, I knew I wanted to say something. I'll let you go, but I got to... Listen, so Nutmeg, they pulling all the stops. You know, I know Jerry Brown, he a son of a bitch. He don't mess around. Now they got the story about her effed up son who was accused of rape in 2006. I told you about those boys. They're racist, entitled, pig people who she gave $30 million to Yale, and nothing ever happened to those pigs. They were calling people nigger, harassing. He broke a woman's ankle. Yale never disciplined them. Come to find out, she donated $30 million. What would you do?
You know what? You take 1/30th of that and you give it to the aggrieved party and say, nothing happened here, did it?
Shut the hell. Since there's some dumb women, you know. So anyway, that's all coming out. And, you know, they're trying to say, well, she can't be responsible. But it's painting a picture of a really nasty person.
But you know what? She is responsible. Because
she's disgusting.
She became responsible when she wrote the $30 million check.
And when she said that she didn't vote because she was so busy being a mother. That was the
there is that, isn't there?
And it's just like, oh, okay. Well, you're so busy, you could never vote for the last 30 years. You was being a good mother, earning billions. Now you think you can come to the table and be a governor?
You know, I saw an article by Van Jones the other day talking about, Republican voter information packets.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Nevada. And apparently, there's this Christian outfit that, and you know how it goes. They never follow the law. I've seen it happen here. They never put any kind of disclaimers. They just go around the church parking lots putting them under windshield wipers during Sunday services. And for instance, Harry Reid got a. Now this is Harry Reid, who's been married to the same woman for a million years, who wouldn't say if he had a mouthful. Who is so meek and mild that he drives us halfway to distraction. And he got a 0% rating from the American Christian Conservative Coalition or whatever it is. On the other hand, a couple of years ago, John Ensign, you remember John Ensign, right?
The idiot whose family paid off another dumb business.
His best friend's wife. Yeah.
I didn't know it was that kind of party.
Oh, yeah.
These people are scandalous.
Yes, it was that kind of party. It was his best. Yeah, it was straight out of a Cars song. It was his best friend's girl. He was sitting there playing Jesse's girl.
That's right up there with the New Jersey governor when it come out that she was part of the three-way.
Hello.
That's my favorite.
But here's the fun part. So Harry Reid gets a 0% from the American Christian Conservative Coalition of Committees and whatever. The same outfit gave John Ensign 100% rating.
Okay, well that's like Moody's or Fitz. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, in that same universe, the Nutmeg is a good mother.
And, you know, it's incredible, but speaking of Harry Reid, he actually is so freaked out that he actually came out in public and said, that bitch is lying. He didn't say bitch, I added that, but he said the word liar. You don't hear politicians say liar. He said she is lying. She's a liar. I was like, I guess $100 million spent up your ass to get you saying something. Because he was, you know, fit to be tied. I'm like... You better wake the hell up. You ain't going to be in the Senate in a minute.
No, oh, Jesus. November 2nd cannot get here quickly enough for me. Not because I want it to be a trouncing or I want it, you know, I've got an outcome I want, but I just.
Well, you have, are you still going to vote for the Republican senator in your state? Is that what you're
No, saying? I'm going to vote for the Mountain Party candidate for Senate. I'm having a real problem in my congressional race because I got a Republican and a Democrat, and the Democrat's done us more harm than the Republican could do because the Republican won't have any power. And I'm in a hell of a quandary. I don't know what... I mean, I know at the very least I walk away leaving that whole race blank.
Well, but listen, let me ask you something. Is that permit, has that permit been squashed, or is this still moving?
No, it's no, that nothing further will be said until November 3rd. Trust me.
It's, oh, okay, because I was surprised. I said, oh, they really are going to stop that from happening. So it's still in.
I was surprised that announcement came out. Simply because it get, you know, it has engendered a whole nother round of no, I love coal more than you love coal ads. It's absolutely sickening here, Sandra. You know, I mean, there's, you know, you have to see the ads. And remember, one of the sleazy ads that was run against my congressman, Nick Rahal, said, you know, Nick Rahal cares what Arabs think. You call Nick Rahal and tell him what matters to you. Really ultra, just filthy. Filthy. And poor Nick Rahal, bless his heart, you know, if he sees a lump of, if he's walking along a railroad track and sees a lump of coal, he gets on his knees and kisses it. I mean, he's so, my God, he jumped out of an airplane for coal. I'm not kidding. And he's being portrayed as the anti-coal candidate. He jumped out of an airplane.
No, it's just, it's really out of control. I mean, listen, I guess, and I think 2012 is just, I mean, I don't even know what the state of things are going to be by then. I am so concerned. I've never seen anything like this. And, you know, I've been following politics for, 20 years, real close. You know what I mean? But this here, this is just, it's really out of control. Oh, I'll leave you with this. So, you know, David Kelly wasn't murdered after all. You cut your wrist, no blood. I mean, come on. Anyway, I just thought that was a bit special.
A little bit. Yeah. Sandra, have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
All right, bye now. I just thought that was a little bit special. Oh, God, you guys are so good for me. These are the best 3 hours of any given day that I have. Onward we go, I hope, I think. No. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? No? Okay. And no. Okay. I want to revisit this before it leaves my mind completely. You tell me, do you get, because do you see why we could never explain a concept like collapsing the legal system to a teabagger? It's damned complex. And I suspect you got it. But can you imagine the Obama administration trying to explain that to the American people? That we've got to do something about the... And first of all, we continue to call it the foreclosure crisis. It is no longer a foreclosure crisis. It is a fraud crisis. Are we clear? This is a systematic practice of fraud that has, my God, it could bring the civil justice system in the several states to a grinding halt. Like that. If we're actually serious about it. And the problem is, once again, you know, we see the Obama administration absolutely terrified. Scared to death of the right-wing echo chamber, because there's 1,000 hours of that for every hour of this. 1,000 hours of right-wing filth spreading, right-wing hate-mongering for every hour of liberal or unbiased broadcasting, either one that exists. There's 1,000 hours of right-wing stuff. It's like the permit here in West Virginia. I was surprised that that got out and saw the light of day, because it's about Well, it's just more fodder in the war on. It's Obama's war on coal. You know, I'd just love for Barack Obama to wake up some morning and go, you know what? I don't think there's any way I am ever going to win West Virginia or Kentucky. So all I got to do is do the right thing. That would be easy enough, wouldn't it? I don't know, Marty. If you'll jump out of a perfectly good airplane for coal, I think he'd probably bungee jump too. Lottie from the chat room offering, Bob, Obama isn't going to do anything until banksters start showing up floating face down in the Hudson River. You gotta wonder just a little bit, don't you? Let's go back to the phones and see what's going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Now it works.
There you are.
Yes. I just wanted to start this conversation on a lighthearted note, which I find funny, but at the same time, I just have to shake my head at this. Apparently, Keith Richards is no longer in Pirates of the Caribbean because Disney is upset with Keith Richards' past life. Holy shit, what a shock.
Disney just figured out who Keith Richards was?
I mean, but to add insult to injury, they just signed up Lady Gaga to do a duet with Elton John. Bit of a disconnect there. I mean, in one of her videos, she's poisoning her boyfriend. But to add to that, Johnny Depp, he hung out with a character study of Hunter Thompson doing God knows how many illicit substances, hanging around with guns in a bunker. And you want to put Keith
Richards out? But see, Johnny Depp doesn't have a new autobiography out.
Oh, yeah, I know that, but at the same time...
Because Keith Richards does, and not only does he goes into great detail. I read some excerpts the other night, and it's one of those things that, you know, you're not going to buy it for the literary quality.
Right, right.
You're taking possession of it solely for the just one after another shock value. There's a line in the book, and I forget what the title of it is, where Keith Richards says, well, I've stayed alive mainly because of the quality of the drugs I've taken.
Yeah. It's always been
the highest quality. And I never tried to add a little bit more. But the best part, but you know, the thing that the tabloids in England all had, and the UK generally had a fit about, was the fact that Keith passed judgment on Mick Jagger's junk.
But you know what's funny about the whole thing is that the character that he's playing is an immoral bastard.
Well, Brian, you know, it's not, yeah, typecasting again.
I know, and it's like Disney had the thought, like, oh my God, this could be bad. We gotta boot Keith out of here.
Ridiculous. Yeah, what? I mean, what? There was a meeting in the boardroom, and what will the children think? Well, the children will think it's Keith Richards. Newborn babies know what Keith Richards is about.
Well, I mean, like the whole thing is just, to me, it's just ridiculous because if you look into Johnny Depp's past, I mean, he doesn't go as far as Keith Richards, but I mean, come on, he went down that road. But anyways,
no, nobody's been down Keith Richards' road. Sorry, nobody's been down that road.
Well, he went on the side of the road.
There are a few people who tried to take a couple of steps, and they're Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix, and they ain't been here for a while.
Well, let's put it this way.
Keith is pro.
He may have crossed the road. He didn't go down the road, and Joaquin Phoenix definitely tried to go down that road, and he ended up in the ditch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I found that kind of...
So no, let me understand. He's been thrown off completely, just not in it?
Yeah. They said, see you later. it's so stupid to me because nobody cares except one of these paranoid CEOs in Disney. Oh, my God! Keith Richards, this memoir is bad. I mean, and he probably doesn't even have that much of a cameo either. He probably has like 2 minutes of screen time.
But no. Yeah, see, you don't have your Hollywood head on. you have to think about the marketing dollar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, your Keith Richards, the Pirates of the Caribbean action figure.
Yeah.
Suddenly, because, you know, the Parents Action Figure Resource Council Against Immoral will pick it outside Disney, and that's what they need. One more pissed off group of teabagging weirdos outside the gates. They already have enough of them having a fit over gay days. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I think they made the call on it. They knew Keith Richards' background, and they would have complained either way. When the movie came out, they would have been like, "Oh my God, you guys got Keith Richards! Did you know Keith Richards did this?" I mean, the memoir book definitely adds to it, but I mean, there's.
Oh, I want to read it. I really do.
I know. I want to read it too. But the
I love the one comment that came from it where he talked about, and I even had to give up the cocaine after I had that one bit of a set to fell out of the coconut palm tree and got a steel plate in me noggin, and now I'm not doing anything, and this was the line, and I gotta tell you, this is the weirdest it's ever been. Keith Richards, life without drugs, as weird as life can be.
Yeah, it's definitely something I want to check out. But what I really called about was the link that I sent you regarding the Congress race with Pete DeFazio and Art Robinson.
Yeah, what is this?
This is this is something you should play in its entirety when you get a chance. The 8 minutes, because DeFazio was actually on Hartman's show today, and he was scrambling just to give like a kind of a setup for people who don't know. I'm sure Susan is all too familiar with this. But DeFazio was on Hartman's show, and he was scrambling a bit because somebody's putting in serious money into Art Robinson's campaign, and Sandra's going to get a kick out of this. Apparently, the mystery man was revealed, and the guy's name is Robert Mercer, who is kind of like a multi-billionaire eccentric. And get this, Bob, get this. He controls 15% of the NASDAQ every day.
Whoa.
He's a hedge fund maestro. And he's known to be quite the curmudgeon who doesn't like people and spent $2 million on a train set. Can't make it.
No, stop it. No, he bought a railroad.
No. He bought a train set for $2 million.
How big is it?
Well, I mean, he's into trains. You know, like Neil Young's into trains? But I don't think Neil Young would spend $2 million. Well, maybe he would. But after some royalties of a box set he put together, maybe Neil would do that. But I just found it funny, the whole thing. So anyways, DeFazio was really out of breath, or really really struggling to stay in this race, I guess, because of the fact of they're pushing so much money into this Art Robinson race, which is just ridiculous if you think about it. DeFazio against this weird wacko guy who actually believes that a little radiation is good for you, and he defined it as a process called hormesis. When I think of hormesis, I hate hormesis to pieces, but. Yeah, but the whole thing is just, it's bizarre, and when you get a chance, you should let people hear what.
Well, this is a passage from Rachel Maddow, right?
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, I don't do that very often because I don't know how hardcore the MSNBC is about having their stuff run.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, just to summarize, the fact is that the Citizens United bill that's come through, this is another example of the craziness that we've unleashed, this Art Robinson guy. And, boy, I watched one of his interviews, and holy cow, this guy is up the bend in ways you can't even imagine. And the crazy thing about it is that, you know, the fact that Robert Mercer was able to hide behind this PAC for so long. I mean, they were lucky to uncover him, but it does say a lot about how races are done now. He's, I think he's funneled into about 150,000 or 200,000. So a race that shouldn't even be close is incredibly close because of this Citizens United decision and the fact that Robert Mercer was just able to just drop in on this race and put this crazy, I don't know, this crazy eccentric teabagger, basically, right front.
Because, I mean, the guy is a teabagger. I mean, he's a real...
Yeah, I mean, he's real. I mean, he is really, really crazy. I mean, he's literally... He has a degree from Caltech, and he went off the bend, I guess, and started studying... He's one of those guys into vitamins. You know, one of those guys that thinks the whole world... The whole problem is we don't need any of these areas of hospitals, these wings of hospitals. We don't need that. We just need some vitamins. Put some vitamins.
And, you know, lo and behold, I just got this link from Sandra. Everything begins to make a little sense when you see this. Again, it's another story from Amanda Turkle over at she used to be at Think Progress. Now she's at Huffington Post.
Right.
Headline, Representative Peter DeFazio investigating impeachment for Chief Justice John Roberts. And, you know, I started hollering that the minute that the Citizens United decision came out.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a guy who's actually willing to talk about it. He said, I mean, the Supreme Court has done a tremendous disservice to the United States of America. They've done more to undermine our democracy with their Citizens United decision than all of the Republican operatives in the world in this campaign. They've opened the floodgates, and personally, I'm investigating articles of impeachment against Justice Roberts for perjuring during his Senate hearings where he said he wouldn't be a judicial activist and he wouldn't overturn precedents. So now it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I mean,
this is
the horse's head in the bed.
Well, it's obviously this is one of the reasons why they wanted to go after. I mean, then he also had those videos on YouTube where he was actually, you know, visiting select congressmen's offices and saying, where do you get your money from and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I understand why they're gunning for him, so to speak. And it definitely something to watch for. And I don't know, but, you know, I think Tom had a great point about this. You know how people are laughing about these candidates? Well, here's something to think about, people. And I've had this feeling for quite some time as well. I don't think you can laugh at any of these candidates because if you...
No, no, you laugh at your peril.
I know, no, you laugh at your peril, but here's the other thing, people. The people who put the money behind them, put the money behind these candidates, they can wait forever. You can't. They don't care. I mean, these guys could literally just fail and completely hit the mat and not make any impact. Doesn't matter to them. They'll go back to the next race and they'll try a different group of candidates. But because now they have this Citizens United decision, it makes it so much easier.
But the point that I have made, David, is that they don't even, after this election cycle is over, they don't even have to spend the money anymore. Do you understand?
Yeah,
do you understand why? Because the implicit threat will be enough to change policy. The implicit threat of Citizens United money being put in against you will be enough to change votes.
Oh, I understand.
You know, there's the right thing to do and the things that the transnational corporations want done. If you know that if you vote for the right thing to do instead of what the transnationals want, you're going to get $3 million in Citizens United money spent against you in another year and a half, how are you going to vote? And they don't even have to, and I want to reiterate this point, David, they don't even have to spend the money.
I hear what you're saying exactly. And the other thing is you know how people were saying, I mean, we have a lot of pundits and writers and people laughing this off, like, oh, these candidates are going to go in flames. But what you don't understand, people, what you don't understand is next time they're just going to dilute the crazy because they're figuring out the formula right now as we speak. So who's going to have the last laugh? Ask yourself that.
There you go. There you go.
I mean, that's the problem we face about is people have this absolution of politics, and I hate this. I literally despise this absolute of politics. Like, oh,
Well, once we do this, they're finished. No, people. No, no, no. They're not finished. No one has ever done in this situation.
That's what I was talking about the other day when I said, look it, you know, like, regardless of the outcome of what happens on November 2nd, the sun is coming up on November 3rd.
I mean, I hate to be so cynical and so grim. You should be looking to 2050, 2060, 2070, and beyond. I mean, because it's just going to keep coming. The waves of the craziness.
And your fellow brother in the David fraternity, David in Tennessee, noting, you know, these guys never take an election off and they never run out of money.
That's exactly my point.
I mean, there's a reason why you don't want businesses' money in politics, because if you've got somebody who never runs out of money, then that means de facto that they can outspend the people who do. You know, it was all well and good that Barack Obama got a whole bunch of $5 donations and Howard Dean before him, and that really did change the paradigm some.
Right, right.
But, again, I think I'm working with your theory of absolutism.
Yeah.
David, what do you think Citizens United is a response to? I mean, I'm not talking about esoterically or legalistically or philosophically. The Citizens United decision was arrived at very, very consciously as a response to the fact that there were Democrats ginning up money from places Republicans didn't think they could get it.
Oh, and you know what?
Light just go on?
Yeah.
So if Howard Dean is out there raising millions, $5 at a time, and Barack Obama takes that model and raises tens of millions, $5 at a time, well, the Supreme Court was there to create a mechanism whereby all of those millions could be rendered meaningless, because millions don't mean shit if the other side's got billions.
I think you pretty much nailed it. And you know, the other thing that people aren't paying attention to, and this is, again, why I look at my fellow Democrats and progressives and liberals and so forth, and they don't get it, Bob. They don't get it. What's happening on talk radio right now, people, is they're setting it up. If Reed wins, they've already set it up for the reasons why he's won, because of how the voting, the polling stations are. They're already pushing that meme all across the radio. And a lot of people don't know that, Bob. They don't understand. They've rigged it both ways. Why people don't get that?
Well, look, anybody who's ever been around a journalism operation knows that there's this thing called the morgue, and right, it doesn't have real dead bodies in it. It's got pre-written obituaries. If you're on deadline, the way you respond to deadline is to pre-write as much as you can, so that you've got two narratives. You've got a he wins narrative and a he loses narrative. You've got a he died of cancer narrative and a he died in a plane crash narrative. It's grim and it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But it's real.
And you know what's funny? Here's the funny thing. This is when I get into discussions on boards with people. When you talk about voting election theft, like on Daily Coast, I say, don't you realize if you guys don't talk about this or discuss voting machines and election theft, when you do have that grand wave that comes in, guess who's going to come and swoop in and talk about it? And then you just get silenced, because they don't get it, Bob. They don't understand. They don't understand the fact is you have to start talking about this right now. You have to start talking about all the issues that are coming up regarding corruption of politics. And if you're afraid, you lose. You automatically lose before even entering on the playboard. You lose.
You've lost before you get in the ring.
Exactly, and that's what we're facing right
now. It's called The Fix Is In.
Mm.
It's a boat race. And look, you know, the for-profit media, they're thrilled with all this. You're not going to get the for-profit media saying bad things about Citizens United money, because where has the Citizens United money gone? Oh, look! Into the for-profit media's pocket.
It's something that just that boggles the mind. And I'll close with this. I was reading an excerpt from Chris Farley's biography book. And one of the scenes in it is when he goes to He just got signed to SNL. And he was outside, and he called his brother Tommy. And he said, Tommy, I just lost all my money. And he goes, Chris, how could you do that? He goes, well, I was outside, and they were playing a game with cards, and I was sure I picked the right one. And he's like, Chris, you can't do that. He goes, but Tommy, I saw people winning. And Tommy just basically told Chris, they were all in on it. You were never going to get anything. Later, people.
There you go. David, take care. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye now. You ain't invited to the party. I'm going to continue on. I want to share something with you real quick, though. Since we're talking about unlimited money and unlimited messaging, this is an ad that's going around out there, and it's going to be one of those where I have to read to you kind of things, but it's been created by Citizens Against Government Waste. And, you know, Citizens Against Government Waste think that government waste constitutes any money not coming to them. Any money being spent by the government that isn't being somehow forwarded to snowflake babies or subsidies that benefit Republicans is government waste. So they've produced this ad, and it's disturbing on a number of levels. It's got subtitles, and what you're seeing in the ad is a room full of people. There's Chinese characters hanging in the background, pictures of heroic Maoist art hanging on the walls. It's a very busy auditorium, and it says, Beijing, China, 2030 A.D. So we've set the stage. This is 20 years in the future, right? Yeah. It's a professor. He's wearing his little Mao suit, and he, you know, there was a shot of ominous feet walking across a black floor, and he asks the question, why do great nations fail? And then the curtain lifts, and you see a picture of the Parthenon and the Flavian Amphitheater in Rome, that most of us know as the Colosseum. The ancient Greeks. And he's being watched attentively by the students in the audience. The ancient Greeks. The Roman Empire. The British Empire. And all these young Chinese faces are watching intently. And the United States of America. This is all subtitled, because, as you can tell, it's in Chinese. They all make the same mistakes. Now, remember who produced this. This is slick. I mean, this is production values. This ain't no YouTube video. There was serious Jed Clampett walking around money spent on this thing. And just to reiterate, they got all the Jed Clampett walking around money they ever could possibly want, thanks to John Roberts, Sammy Alito, Slappy Thomas, and Tony Scalia. The rats. They got all the money they could ever possibly want. Turning their backs on the principles that made them great. They all make the same mistakes, turning their backs on the principles that made them great. Big picture, Abraham Lincoln in the background. And then this. This is the natural outgrowth of the Randian anarchist streak inside the authoritarian Republican Party. America tried to tax and spend itself out of a great recession. Now, there's nothing here to suggest that there's any authority to any of this. 100 years ago, this ad, well, if there'd been film, maybe it would have been a morality play on a village commons. It would have had black people in it. But in 2010, you get scary Chinese people in the year 2030. Enormous so-called stimulus spending. Massive changes to health care. Government takeovers of private industries. And crushing debt. Of course, we owned most of their debt. So now they work for us. This is worth your time if you go and find it. I found it on YouTube. I just typed in Citizens Against Government Waste, Chinese Professor. This is how you gin up fear and hatred inside an ignorant populace. Because you know what? If you don't know anything at all, about economics, that makes perfect sense. It's like any other lunacy. If you were just an ordinary workaday German housewife. You know, Hitler said it was the Jews. Well, that made sense, because he sat there and talked for a long time and said Jew a lot. But these right-wing bastards won't tell you that it was right-wing politics that have sent our jobs to China. That in fact it's the transnational corporations that run the Republican Party that take American jobs to China. You know that, I know that. We own their... Where did the debt come from? There was a line in there about, and of course we owned most of their debt. Of course, Citizens Against Government Waste isn't going to mention the Dutch, because it's really hard to get real scared of the Dutch, or the English, who own boatloads of our debt. No, it's those strange-looking people. They're inscrutable, and they love them some Chairman Mao. Where'd that debt come from? All that Chinese debt, did that just happen the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated? Just boom, trillions of dollars of Chinese debt just sitting there. Was that the deal with the devil that he made? You know, you make me president, Mr. Premier of China, and I'll give you all of America's debt? See, I was paying attention the last 10 years, especially the last 5. Kind of been my job to pay attention. Now, I know where the debt came from. See, back before the teabaggers were bagging, a whole lot of us liberals were screaming about debt. Because there's debt and there's debt. There's the debt you have when you have to go into debt to solve problems, like stimulus spending. Reputable economists, you know, Paul Krugman, Dean Baker, many others, will tell you in much more clear and understandable terms than I can, because I'm no economist and I don't play one on the radio. But they'll tell you that you got it, and there's real world examples. You know, Sweden pulling itself out of other nations pulling themselves out of crises with deficit spending in the midst of economic collapse. That's the kind of debt you kind of have to have. 1937. Roosevelt had pretty much licked the Great Depression. But he started listening to his advisors from the business community who said, oh, you know, this deficit spending, oh, we're worried about deficit spending. Deficit spending makes us nervous. Deficit spending makes us pee in our pants. And so he engaged in fiscal belt tightening, and the damn depression reblossomed. And then there's the kind of debt you don't have to have. There's the kind of debt that is run up when ignorant little pig-eyed, jug-eared louts stand in front of microphones and cameras and say things like, he tried to kill my daddy. Wanted, dead or alive. You go back there, Richard Clark, and don't you come back here with any 9/11 answers until you've got a hot-smoking gun going straight to Saddam Hussein, because I want to F him. We're going to take him out. And we bled billions. We bled a lot of O-positive and O-negative and A and B and AB. Oh, we bled and they bled, and we hemorrhaged money. But the godforsaken teabaggers can't remember that.
That half a white man, half a Kenyan, he ran us into debt, and I want my country back.
God almighty. There's debt and there's debt. And I remember who ran it up first. God, I was in the middle of the salad years of my 30s. And I actually wasn't worried about Social Security because, well, you know, we'd taken care of a lot of the... And the budget was in fine shape when Bill Clinton was leaving office. And Al Gore stood on the courthouse steps and debate platforms all over this country, and he said, we need a lockbox. We've got to make sure Social Security can't be touched. And now's the time to do it because we've got a surplus to work with. And that little pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout said, it's your money, and I want to give it back to you because our economy's running too hot. We got to cool it off. And then Florida, and the big surrender. And by the time March of 2001 had rolled around, George wasn't talking about the hot economy anymore. He was, we got to have some tax cuts to stimulate the economy because it's cooled off too much. Goddamn Goldilocks presidency, too hot, too cold. I remember where the debt came from. And so if that does actually happen 20 years from now, somewhere in Beijing in a university lecture hall, I want to be sure that I can find me some folks from Citizens Against Government Waste and kick their asses all the way from their K Street offices right down into the damn Potomac. Because they're the ones that got it for us. They're the ones that gave it to us. They're the ones who sat there and said, oh, we've got to fight him over there, or we'll have to fight him over here. Really? But that's okay. Because they got all the money they could possibly want. And they can put out that filthy lie, and maybe and who knows what filthy lie they're working on next. Because they got enough money to burn a herd of sopping wet elephants. And that is a fact. I just had to share that with you. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's up?
Not much, self.
Getting along?
You know, this whole foreclosure mess, as they're calling it,
The fraud crisis? Can we change the name? Can we call it the foreclosure fraud crisis?
Certainly. I think it should be. I think it's a RICO offense. I mean, this was scheduled. This was organized. This is the very definition of a RICO offense. Racketeer influence.
Yes, it is. Let's haul out the RICO statute and put it to work.
Hell yeah.
But then again, that might require Eric Holder to look back and not forward.
Well, if you don't know where you've been, how the hell do you know where you're going?
Good observation.
You know, and that's the problem with this that I've had with this entire administration. Oh, we're not going to look back. We're just going to look forward. You have to know enough to look back to see the hole that you fell in. You know? You have to know that maybe driving blindly ahead is worse than looking back to see how you got here. You know, why the tires are flat. You know, the passengers are screaming, but the tires are flat. That's why.
I agree. And, you know, Obama's going around the country saying things like, you know, the Republicans drove us into a ditch for 10 years, or for 8 years, and now they say they want to drive again, and hollering, you can't drive! And I agree with that.
Yeah, they can.
But if you're not willing, if you're not willing to do anything about it to make because, you know, there are administrative proceedings that take away driver's licenses, and that involves looking back on past poor driving conduct.
Correct. I mean, that's part of the problem. We never made the people who, let's face it, who tanked the economy, we never caused them to admit their guilt, to pay the penalty for their guilty behavior, and they're demanding that they have the right to drive the bus again. We don't even know if they have sobered up from last time. And they were drunk as skunks then. You know, this is like somebody who is a habitual DWI offender saying, I've mended my ways. Well, after your 35th DWI, I'm going to believe you.
Right, or your third or your fourth.
Right, but I mean, we have people out here with 30 and 40 DWIs, and they think they have a right to be on the roadway.
Well, see, what drove me crazy about that ad is I heard it being touted by a right-winger earlier today. And, this is so true. This is absolutely the truth. And, you know, I was face-palming. Because the guy reaches millions. All of whom are nodding their heads and saying, yes, this is the truth. You know, the thing plays on, you know, Chinese communism and, you know, collectivism, and they're all sitting there paying attention in class and being told what to think, and there's pictures of Mao and all of that. But who are the real authoritarian, non-questioners out there? Who are they really, Cossack?
They're not us.
No, we make it really, you know, we make it really hard for people like Robert Gibbs to do his job, because we do ask questions. We don't herd well.
No. And that's kind of what really offended me when Gibbs slapped down the professional left. Bob, is anybody paying you to make all this crap?
No.
There hasn't been a professional left bone in my body since God only knows when. It's never been professional. It's been a labor of love. That's sometimes why I wonder. You know, we try desperately to get people like Obama in who say that they will change things.
Yeah, just make a little bit of the right noises here and there.
Yeah, and we bust our backs for them. And then they turn around and give us the back of their hand.
Well, it's kind of like David in South Carolina wrote to me a couple of minutes ago, Cossack. He said, all these people who cheered on the Obama victory took a deep breath and then decided to take a rest while the other side ratcheted up their game. You know, and we've done it. We've done it again and again and again, and I know you know the history behind it. You know, when you've got the enemy on the run, when they're in full-blown, just totally panicked retreat, which they were in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
You run them to earth, and you don't let them get back up.
No.
And I'm not talking in eliminationist terms. I'm not talking about shooting anybody. But you message hard on why they failed. You know, look at the first one of those early attempts. You know, when Flimball came out with that, I hope he fails. And they tried to message on it a little bit, and the for-profit media was right there for Rush. Oh, he's beating up on poor little Rush. You know, he can't hear real good.
Yeah. I can't hear you. It's the OxyContin, you know.
drove me deaf, it did.
God. What a weak excuse for it.
And then, you know, there's the dinner party at the George Will's house where everybody sits around over hummingbird tongue soup. And then we have beans and Kool-Aid in styrofoam cups with the liberal broadcasters and bloggers. Jesus!
Exactly. Well, at least it's Senate bean soup, so.
That is good stuff.
We have that.
Yeah.
You know, slight comfort though it is. But, you know, the whole thing is though, this was premeditated, okay? When you have these kind of boiler room operations where you're churning out documents with bogus signatures on, that is premeditated. That requires...
Well, okay, let me ask. Do you understand what I'm getting at about what this means in terms of the collapse of the legal system?
Oh, yeah. Because at this point, how do you prove that you have clear title to anything?
Right, you know, the laws of evidence, the rules of evidence about how you admit business documents?
Yeah.
Those were done as an expedient, and it's predicated upon everybody being honest with everybody else.
Right.
You know, you're not going to bring in Batman number 622 and claim that it's kept in the normal course of business at the hospital.
Correct.
Everybody's going to play at least, because the thing is, the rules are set up in such a way that if everybody doesn't play on the square, then one of these days you know that it's going to bite you in the ass, and then, you know, it'll be your ox getting gored. But in this case, the bank said, I don't give a damn. We will, and that's the whole thing. Through the front end of the crisis, with the credit default swaps and all of that garbage, they didn't give a damn. They were gonna get theirs now.
Yeah.
And they didn't care if they crashed entire nations.
And what drove me crazy, Bob, is the fact that the courts put up with it. They were okaying this garbage. They weren't even asking for the documents, even when.
Right, but that's the thing. I'm cutting the courts a little bit of slack because you're not supposed to dummy on this stuff. You're not supposed to. It's illegal to commit a fraud upon the court.
No, it's a criminal act. Last time I heard.
Yes, it is. And you know what?
Jail.
Every lawyer. I'll go ahead and say this. Every lawyer who submitted foreclosure documents and pled them into the court under his or her signature should be summarily disbarred.
Absolutely. I mean, if they had any inkling whatsoever.
But I mean, I know you read a lot. Is anybody talking about this besides us?
I don't think so.
Is it just too esoteric? Is it too much to...
Well, there are some people, Mike Whitney, the usual suspects, okay? Mike Whitney's talking about it.
I wonder if Jonathan Turley is. Because when you get down to where you're fooling around inside the rules of civil procedure and the rules of evidence, you've got, you know, you've put on the cloak.
Yeah. And this has gone well beyond economics and, you know, the idea of that you have some kind of vague cover of law. I mean, this is out and out fraud. You cannot get any more obvious than this. And for the House of Morgan to say, oh, okay, we checked over it, everything's fine, we're going back to our foreclosures. How can everything be fine? There's no way in hell that you could have checked even a tiny fraction of the mortgages that were ginned up, that have no validity. You know, we're not even going to touch on the fact that you have people out there who took on mortgages on the assurance of the bank that there was no possible way they would default. But, you know, oh, your property will continue to appreciate. You've got nothing to worry about. You'll definitely be able to pay this off.
You know what? I did the last time somebody told me a bet was a sure thing. Lost.
Yeah. That's what happens 90% of the time.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Well, I don't think. See, that's the difference. I look at the foreclosure fraud story. And Kostak, I'm pretty sure we haven't seen not what's under the visible part of the iceberg. We haven't even gotten the iceberg in view yet.
No.
We just know that it's really cold.
Exactly. I don't think people really realize just how dire a situation we're really in. I think you're touching on it quite well. And you know, people should start realizing that with the foreclosure, with the fraud that we're looking at, it could be the, you know, the total collapse of the civil legal system.
And that has, but you know what, nothing, and again, let me drive this point home, nothing would thrill corporate America more. You know, they've spent millions trying to get ballot initiatives for tort reform and to close the courthouse doors to injured people and people wronged by corporations. Look, you can go out in the middle of the desert and say McDonald's coffee cup, and somebody who doesn't know anything at all will go, yeah, that woman won $40 million and all she did, the dumbass jumped your coffee.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know that she had third-degree burns over her entire lap area, including her genitals, that she was 70 years old, that she had to have reconstructive surgery, that McDonald's had been told 100 times that keeping their coffee at 190 flipping degrees was going to get somebody hurt.
Yep.
No, they just know that spiel.
Well, that and the fact this works
perfectly for corporate America, because instead of closing the courthouse doors and fooling around with the time-consuming BS like elections, they can just crash the system.
Yeah.
And then it don't matter if Doc chopped off the wrong leg. You ain't getting into court.
Well, essentially what they've done. And this will not end well, as the old saying goes.
Yeah, as I did something wicked this way comes. Hey, Cossack, good talking to you, brother. You have a wonderful weekend, all right?
You too, Bob.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida, back home now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I just had to call in when I heard you talking about Pete DeFazio.
Yes.
What David didn't mention about the hedge fund guy?
Yeah.
He doesn't live in Oregon. He lives in New York.
But you know, they're trans-state, transnational.
Oh yeah, I understand that.
They don't care. And you know what? Citizens United doesn't care either.
No, the fun thing, here's the fun thing. According to 538.com, you know, Nate Silver's statistics, the chance of Pete DeFazio winning back his seat, 100%.
But that's still speculative. I mean, this guy's in what, within 6 points now, and he shouldn't have been within 60?
Well, let me put it this way. Nate Silver has this nasty habit of being right.
Well, true, true.
And, you know, it's just...
But what David said was, you know, they don't... And well, what both David said, David from Maine and David in Tennessee, they both said essentially the same thing. It doesn't matter, because they'll make more, and they'll be back.
Oh, yeah. They will be back. They will be back. And that's why after the election, I said, okay, you have today to celebrate, and then it's time to get back to work. And apparently the rest of the country decided, well, we'll just take the rest of the decade off. Because you can't stop. You have to do what the Republicans do. The minute one election is over, they start prepping for the next.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you saw this story earlier today, but somehow this fits in. Headline, George W. Bush reveals his biggest failure was not privatizing Social Security. You know, he really is. He's mean, pig-eyed, and spiteful. You think he's doing that just to screw with the Republicans because they're all running around? No, I never said I wanted to privatize Social Security. I don't want to give Social Security money. Them fellers on Wall Street. I don't want to do that. I would like to be remembered as a guy who had a set of priorities and was willing to live by those priorities. In terms of accomplishments, my biggest accomplishment is that I kept the country safe amidst a real danger. I have written a book. This will come as quite a shock to some. They didn't think I could read, much less write.
He didn't write it, first of all. And secondly, how can you consider... tell me how he kept the country safe. We had the two...
Yeah, see, that's still lost on me.
...history on his watch. 9/11 and the anthrax attacks, which, by the way, nobody is even bothering to investigate... Yeah. I know. I shouldn't let it run my blood pressure up.
Kind of hard not to, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the guy just... I really wish he would go on a nice jaunt to Europe, specifically Germany, so they can arrest him.
Yep. Wouldn't bother me in the least.
Oh, I'd sit out there and I'd cheer. I would jump up and down for joy, and then I'd call the German consulate and I'd cheer him again.
Be kind of hard not to, wouldn't it?
I really would. The day he got shipped off to the Hague, I would just jump for joy. And no, if anybody's listening from the dear Spookland, that is not an illegal pronouncement.
Oh, no, not at all.
Wishing legal justice through the justice system is not illegal.
Yeah.
Although, what I would like to know, you started out your show with the dude down in Texas talking about the violent overthrow of the government.
Yes.
I want to know, has he gotten a visit from the Secret Service and the FBI? Because the last time I heard advocating the...
No, he never has.
...overthrow of the United States government is against the law.
No, he hasn't. Daggummit. IOKIYATB. It's okay if you're a teabagger. It's okay if you're a Republican. Besides, we all know, you know, Radio Rwanda has been telling us for months now, you know, the big threats from the new Black Panther Party.
Yeah, three guys that dress weird. And they were probably off their meds. Yeah, give me a break. A black pepper ketchup. I gotta tell you, this country is going to hell. And I'm really glad I'm within running distance of Canada.
Don't think they won't seal those borders, Susan.
Not gonna say a word. Not gonna say a word.
Well, see, I understand. But the... yeah, it's getting a little...
Trying it and accomplishing it are two different things. That's a very, very long border. They will, of course, close the plane, you know, crossing.
Sure.
Hell.
Oh, and by the way, that train set that David was talking about earlier, Texas Betsy let me know, that train set fills half a basketball court in his home.
Yeah, it's huge.
More dollars than cents. Although, I gotta admit, I'll cut him some slack if it's a Gomez Adams train set. You know, with explosives.
You're a fan of the Adams family too, huh?
Oh gosh, yes. Shoot him in the back, Gomez. Shoot him in the back.
Yes, yes, yes.
I always loved things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, well, Grandmama, whose sister was she?
Oh, God.
No, like a famous beauty or something. Her name was Blossom something.
I can't remember. I'm sure I'll probably get you know, let it not, and then eventually spend half the night on the computer trying to find out. But I did, you know, it's just, that's one of the wonderful, wonderful creations. You see Adam's family. It's just, they're people I would dearly love to have known.
Blossom Rock. Blossom Rock was the original Grandmama in the series.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I knew it was Blossom something. And, yeah, she's the elder sister of Jeanette McDonald.
Oh, okay.
See, I know. I can, yeah, it's not all mush up here anymore.
Jeanette McDonald sounds, you know, like your average everyday, you know, well, 1920s name. Blossom Rock sounds like a hippie.
Well, Susan, have yourself a wonderful weekend, dear.
Oh, I'll attempt it. You and the kids, hang in there and give my love to Agnes.
All right, sure will. We'll talk soon.
Okie doke.
Bye now.
Bye.
And a little reminder in, that's Susan calling from Oregon, our news ninja. A little reminder in from Jim. Hermann Göring had a tremendous train set at his Karin Hall estate. Like mines? I don't know. The Gomez Adams set was the one. Because, yeah, it was kind of fun every time. Granted, it was stock footage, and they ran the same thing every time. But just the imagination that you would have an eccentric guy like Gomez Adams who enjoyed blowing up his train set. Wonderful. Yeah, and you know what? I am so not going to play Indian Love Song by Jeanette McDonald and Nelson Eddy. No, you can't make me. When I'm calling you. See, that's as much singing as I'm going to do on a Friday night. Let's see. Are you there? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Andy.
Hey, Andy, what's up?
Not much. Redwood City.
Hallelujah.
I found it interesting you talking about, I think it was David from Maine brought up the Mercer situation. The hedge fund guy. And here's a guy probably only pays 15% on taxes, too. It's amazing.
Just 15%?
Yeah, he's a hedge fund manager.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
The only thing on capital gains.
Gee whiz.
It's a wonderful thing.
What a racket.
And just to be able to throw your money around without anybody knowing that you're doing it.
I want to be a hedge fund manager. How do I do this? I mean, is it box hedges or privet hedges or? Sorry, I'm being a smartass.
It's just an amazing country how unfair the system is, and how you have these senators who will not allow that to ever come up, that you can put a decent tax rate on these guys that are just raping us. I think the top 10 hedge fund managers all made over $1 billion last year or something like that. And think of the loss, you know, to the Treasury, and you have these huge deficits. And before I heard you ranting on the deficit, you know, it's an amazing thing, and I don't hear enough Democrats talking about this, although I did listen to the Sestak-Toomey debate the other day.
Yeah.
And he tried to drive it home, but that deficit was run up, as you were saying, by Bush, $11 trillion. Bush, Obama, it's now $12 trillion. So Obama's tacked on a trillion. What's that, less than 10% to what he was left with Bush? Why isn't it that driven home? If Sestak tried to do that in a debate, you know, here you go. These guys, they drove it up. And unfortunately, the economy's not coming back to drive it back down again. But that was Bush, man. That was Bush. And, of course, Obama's too cowardly, too afraid to really stick it to the Republicans and let the people know that they caused all this. It's their fault. It's that off. It's like Wall Street. The Republicans took a piece out of Wall Street's playbook there, where they kept the wars off the books. Now, keep Iraq off.
Yeah, the whole thing was done off the books. Have we forgotten all this? I mean, you're bringing it up, but has all of this just escaped our? Is it just? Has there been so much crap piled up since that we've forgotten?
That seems that way. It just doesn't seem like it's being driven home enough. And you know, you haven't talked about it, but I thought it's interesting, too, what's happening in France.
Yeah, oh.
And I don't think the bully is getting out either.
You know, they sent the bully boys in with the clubs and the truncheons, and they broke up the blockade of that one fuel depot.
Tom, they have to beat up the kids a little bit, you know.
Well, yeah, you know. Right.
Knock a little sense into them.
Yeah.
They must be thinking wrong. They don't have that neocon... you know, free market spirit.
But the bigger news was what came out later in the day, and that was that the French Senate had passed Sarkozy's the pension reform.
Right, the 60 to the 62 age.
Yeah.
No, what else?
Pray that the French people will not stand for that.
Right. With that package, what else they were trying to do, and I'm not sure if that stayed in the package they were trying to pack, but they were trying to lower the top tax bracket, too. And I know their target tax, top tax bracket was supposed to be 50%. Now, I don't know what it was or what it was before, but it was probably, I think, 80% or something like that. So that's another reason the unions and a lot of the socialists and the leftists were very upset, is because they're doing a Margaret Thatcher, man. They're trying to pull off a Margaret Thatcher and a Ronnie Reagan. They're lowering the top tax bracket, too, and that didn't come over well. But you don't hear that here. See, that was the trade-off. This is how you pay for lowering the top tax bracket and pay that off by going after the pensioners.
And see, that's one of the things that just scares me, because there's something to hope for in European social systems. Because people retire with dignity, and they have health care, and vacations, and all kind, you know, nice things. But lo and behold, you know, they got away with it in Britain, they got away with it in the United States, and you know what? They want France's, and they want Germany's, and they want Sweden's.
Right.
These evil thieving bastards, Andy, and who stops them? Where's, I mean, frankly, if the French don't draw the line in the sand, for all the jokes about the French, if the French don't draw the line in the sand, I don't know who can.
Right. They're trying to do the same model that we have here, you know, these neoliberal policies to just let the conservatives, I don't even want to call them conservatives, you know, let these
robber barons,
free marketeer Tories just go crazy. You know, the same thing in Britain, too, where they're knocking down 20% of the budget. You know, a total slap in the face to Keynesian economics, where you have a bad economy and you're just going to make, you know, knock out 500,000 jobs of state workers. This is insanity, you know, total insanity. And, you know, this Tory exchequer, George Osborne, is just, you know, eating it up. And I think Paul Krugman said today in his piece, this is shades of Andrew Mellon during the early 1920, 1923. You know, let them eat cake, man, basically. We'll just get rid of all the workers. We don't need the workers.
But isn't this also a patent manifestation of the real meaning of globalism, Andy? Globalism doesn't mean lifting workers up to where everybody has a decent life on the planet. Globalism means finding any pocket where working people have a decent life and grinding them into the dust.
Right, and the shame is they're making the working people pay for these huge deficits that were rung up by what? They were rung up by the bankers, by the financiers.
Yeah, that's the thing. Granny and Granddad out there didn't do this to America.
Right. The Wall Street, this guy Mercer is one of the pigs that did it. These guys are just running up and running a hedge fund that probably is just running these super fast computers with these high speed trading garbage that isn't investing anyway, that should be outlawed, if not outlawed, and we've talked about this before.
No, it's a Wall Street Keno machine.
Right, there should be huge transaction taxes put on each transaction, each trade. Make them pay up. Until 1966, there used to be transaction taxes put on each trade. That's got to be brought back. But, you know.
See, I like the idea of a portfolio tax, not a capital gains tax where you only tax on the transaction or even a straight transaction tax. I want a portfolio tax. You know, I've got a rusty red pickup truck out here. And every year I have to go over to the county courthouse and I have to pay tax on my rusty red pickup truck that isn't worth that isn't worth a tenth or a hundredth of the value of some stock, a millionth of stock portfolios. Those things have assessable values. Why don't we tax them like we tax cars and trucks and boats? Does that make any sense?
A wealth tax.
Well, I mean, isn't that what my property tax is?
Some countries do that. I think Britain does it. I think Britain still has a wealth tax on your total wealth. You get hit with some percentage tax.
Well, and that's the whole point. I've got one, and I don't have any wealth. I pay a poverty tax.
Right. It's always these regressive taxes that hit the little guy much harder. And the shame is the little guy in this country is too stupid to understand this.
And you know, and I guess we could spend an entire program, Andy, on why is the little guy in this country too stupid to understand this? You know, do we blame it on bread and circuses? Do we blame it on a deliberately dumbed down educational system? You know, I know that I've walked into the swamp anytime I start talking about economics because I can be up to my ankles one second and completely over my head the next. Economics is like that. You know, Jim just wrote in and he said it was just announced in the UK 2 days ago that they're eliminating 500,000 jobs in the civil service, and over the next 4 years all those jobs will be privatized.
That's what they hope. They're hoping that those job eliminations will be sucked up by the private system. You know, they're hoping that the economy comes back by then and we'll be able to suck up those jobs. Yeah, good luck. The same thing was supposed to happen here. Same thing. Baloney.
Yeah, that's because the thing it is baloney. It's a Ponzi scheme. There's that word. It's fraud, Andy.
Right. You know those workers that do lose their jobs and get cut, they won't get the same benefits that they had when they were with the civil service.
No.
Close. Not in that wretched country. I mean, they're the same as we are here. It's the Anglo system which just tears people apart in the private system. And you know what, too? Britain's debt is 11.5% of their current GDP right now. Ours is 10.7% of our GDP. You wait till that cat food, as Sandra affectionately calls it, Alan Simpson's Cat Food Commission, comes back with the Social Security cuts that they want, and the de rigueur or the austerity they want. Just wait. You know that they're going to come back and they're just going to go, oh, England made the sacrifice, man. They made the cuts. Why aren't we cutting back here? You know, why aren't we making the huge cuts? Everybody's got to participate. Yeah, baloney, everybody participates. It's ruthless to the people at the lower rungs of society. And that's where you wait. You just wait. Especially if the Republicans get in. They are going to do the same cookie cutter that this guy Osborne has just, Cameron?
Yeah.
Prime Minister in England? That they just put through. You wait. They're going to, Obama's going to come up with the same thing as soon as that cat food commission comes back. You wait. I'll bet you.
Won't take the bet. I won't take it.
Because Obama's got no spine, no backbone. He's just a coward. And you think that's going to change? Baloney. Matter of fact, I think it's going to get worse, especially if the Republicans gain seats.
Well, didn't he tell it? I mean, in that New York Times Sunday magazine didn't he tell us that? He said, you know, after the election, things are going to get better because he's looking forward to being finally able to work with the Republicans then?
It's going to be like Bill Clinton redux, baby. Bill Clinton, let's get rid of let's do all the things the Republicans could never do, never get through. That's what they'll do. Like the dream wish list of every Republican fascist to just destroy Social Security, just stamp it out. And if not stamp it out, privatize it and have half of it in the stock market for their buddies on Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, the nerve of George Bush to say that his greatest regret is not getting to, you know, not getting to privatize Social Security?
Oh, no question. That's what he wanted.
But my God, America's pensioners would be at least 40 to 50%. They'd have taken a 50% cut in their Social Security check.
Yep. The market.
You can't live that way.
Right, the market for the retail investor is for suckers. It's just for suckers, man. And, you know, just like W.C. Fields, there's one born every day. And that's what the market will do. It'll just kill you. The only way it works, and that's questionable, we should go back. John Maynard Keynes was big in this. You have to get out of the speculative trading scenario. You have to de-incentivize speculation in the system. You have to get it back to long-term investing. You got to
buy and hold, right?
Right.
It's buy and hold that creates blue chips. It's buy and hold that creates market stability. And treating it like a Keno board is how you get where you get.
Right. It's this massive speculation, this massive trading, this high-speed trading. That kills the system, and it makes it impossible for people to get out the doors when they have to get out, and it makes it impossible to hold capital long enough for these companies to actually do what the system's supposed to do, provide capital where it's needed, to provide resources where it needs to be in the economy.
So that's how you get a flexible economy that can meet coming challenges.
Right, and that means Main Street shares the wealth with the rest of it. And now Main Street is just getting hammered, of course, and the people are getting. But Wall Street in New York, man, is guns a-blazing. They're not seeing any recession there.
Man, life is good.
Going like bonkers. Life is good in Wall Street.
Yeah, Sandra just went and did a little homework. and sent this along to me based on what you said. The exact quote from Andrew W. Mellon: liquidate labor, liquidate stocks, liquidate the farmers, liquidate real estate. It will purge the rottenness out of the system. High costs of living and high living will come down. People will work harder, live a more moral life. Values will be adjusted, and enterprising people will pick up from less competent people.
Yeah, how many people
Jesus.
In that plan? Starve them to death. Starve them and work them to death. Work them to the bone. Andrew Mellon was a son of a B-boy. No compassion there. Not at all.
And just remember that it does, you know, the apple falleth not far from the tree, Andy, because you know, I seem to remember the mid-90s when a man named Richard Mellon Scaife was willing to spend every penny he had moving heaven and earth just to get Bill Clinton.
Right.
Who, by our own acknowledgement, wasn't exactly a paragon of liberalism.
Correct. Now, these guys want it all. There's no question.
I don't know if we can drive that home point, that point home well enough, Andy. They want it all.
And once they have it all, they want more. There's no limit.
No, because some schlub will always have something they can take.
Right. And that's why one of the last bastions left is Social Security. They want that. They want that.
And that's why I look at the French system as being one of the last bastions left of civilized, Western-style, socially responsible government.
Right. And the French know if they take this away, there's going to be more to come, because the French, you know, aren't just like Margie Thatcher and Reagan. They didn't stop. Sarkozy will keep going for more.
Yeah.
Keep doing more that just makes that a brutal capitalistic state like the U.S. is, and take away more services and more social benefits that they have that we don't. That's his goal, man.
It's another,
they know it.
Yeah, and it's another case of the lights beginning to go out in Europe.
Right.
And you know what? That never means anything good for the rest of the planet. Andy, I got a roll, but great conversation, my friend.
All right, take care. Have a nice weekend, Bob.
You too. Bye now.
Righto. Bye-bye.
Andy calling from Redwood City, California. It is time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who's made for a wonderful week. I really appreciate all of your help, your calls, your emails, your contributions to the program, your chat in the chat room. Thanks for, and you know who you are, for getting us so close to this month's fundraising goal. Each and every one of you know who you are. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. To our blogger, Texas Betsy. To my head writer, David in Tennessee. To our cavalcade of crazy columnists at headonradionetwork.com. That's Reverbo. Matt Osborne is our Southeast correspondent at osborneinc.com, also posting at Crooks and Liars. John Fox is our chief engineer and has done yeoman work this week, and it is much appreciated. Ben Birch makes everything happen and everything go on the streaming and podcasting ends of things at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. There's one more hard-working, brave little fellow in the camp now. Welcome to the world, Oz Milo. Born to the proud parents Sarah and Vernon Haltom today. Welcome to the world, Oz. We're trying to make it a little bit better, and your mama and your daddy are trying real hard. And always, always, always.